And you also have the exam this morning?
I have the exam in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah, the afternoon. Everyone's studying. I know, I saw. Okay, I'll teach.
What exam?
Bus of a Chol. They're ready? You just tell me when I can start.
Yeah.
You're wrong. Okay, so today is Monday, it's our last shiur before Pesach. Yitzchak, come close. And we have outsiders, but no students. There's an exam in Bus of a Chalav today, and it's the usual story. The days are over when I are. At least I have one student. I used to have students who used to say, Rebbe, you don't have to call any shiur. We can handle it. We can come to your shiur. We can take the exam. It was a different generation.
When do we pick up
again? We pick up the week after Pesach. It's no big deal, because Pesach ends Sunday, Monday. And a week later on Sunday, the kollel starts again.
Are you going to
Chutzlars? I'm here that Sunday, Monday. Then I'll announce what's happening. Now, I just want to mention that yesterday in Shir, I couldn't think of Rabbi Pechenik's first name. I was speaking about Rabbi Pechenik. Anyway, his name is my name, Aaron Pechenik. I was giving the names of his children, Yitzchak, Shalom. I was all confused. Also, I want to repeat again for those, because I don't remember which year this came up in, but I raised the question of being Mesada Kedushin, where you, when it's inside a shul. So I raised the question whether the Rav would be Mesada Kedushin in a shul or not. And I got an email from Rabbi Mark Dratch, my dear student, who says, when he married Sarah Lem, Zichrona Levracha, she passed away over a year ago already. Ugh. So the wedding was in the Great Neck Synagogue, and the Rav was Masada Kedushin. So that tells us about the Rav. He also says when his friend Barry Feder got married, it had to be in the gymnasium of the JCC in Scranton and not the shul, because he wanted Rav David Lipschitz to officiate.
You not officiated my wedding
because it was a short. Okay, so you have Eidut Nemanah that the Rav yes, Rav David no. Now, the whole question of who that letter was written to, which has bedeviled us with the Rav Chanan Wasserman and Karev Adas and Rabbi Shimon Schwab. So a Talmud of mine, Rabbi Baruch Harris, who is a wonderful individual, he's my Talmud through the internet, and I understand he came in Aliyah. He teaches Torah in Afula. His father's Rosh Yeshiva, or one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Chafetz Chaim. And here's a young man who said we can be Mabitz Torah in Queens, but why not do it Al Admat HaKodesh? And he has a Yeshiva in Afula. So he wrote to me a whole letter with sources trying to prove once again that the letter was to Rav Shimon Schwab. So I told them I can't crawl out of it because once they contacted the Schwab family and once they contacted the Mendelovich family and they say they have the original letter, that proves the letter was to Mr. Mendelovich. What probably happened is there are two letters floating around. In other words, the original letter may have been to Mr. Mendelovich right after Yeshiva College opened. The line that the Torah mourns because they place the Torah and secular study under one roof can only apply to Yeshiva College. Rabbi Harris tries to bring a proof from the other line that in your country they require a PhD. It's not the government that requires it, it's the Balabatim. So that could refer to German Orthodoxy. So it may be that there are two letters. Again, the fact that Rabbi Louis Isby and Rabbi Leon Chait both told me 50 plus years ago that the letter was written to Mr. Mendelovich is a very big factor. So I want to thank Rabbi Harris for his research, but I'm left zero zero. Teku ephes ephes. Or teku echad echad. Eich sherotzim lahagbir itzeh. But I would say there could be two letters, one based upon the other. Rebbe Elchanan kept a copy, and he did have an ongoing correspondence with Mr. Mendelovich, and certainly Rabbi Schwab asked a number of people. Now, finally, a Talmud listening, Rabbi Meir Gurkov, Chabadnik, I mentioned how the Rebbe said there were no dinosaurs and how my grandchildren were learning in a Chabad school and my father, my son-in-law, took them out overnight because a Halzichfa scientist, he does have a bachelor's from Columbia U in science. So he said to me, this is a quote from the Rebbe, and the quote, if this quote is what the Rebbe really said, then it's not that the Rebbe said there weren't dinosaurs. What the Rebbe was excluded, was saying, in the view of the unknown conditions which existed in prehistoric times, conditions of atmospheric pressures, temperatures, radioactivity, unknown catalyzers, etc., etc., as already mentioned, conditions that is, which could have caused reactions and changes of an entirely different nature and tempo from those none under the present-day orderly process of nature. One cannot exclude the possibility that dinosaurs existed 5722 years ago and became fossilized under terrific natural cataclysms in the course of a few years rather than in millions of years, etc., etc. So, of course, what the Rebbe is saying here is what Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik said to us. I thank you for coming. You don't know, there's an exam today in Basavachalov, so I have to thank any student who shows up. It's a miracle. But I do have many listening, but I see with the Watson family, either the wife comes or the husband comes. He's coming, oh, Baruch Hashem, this week's Achiti. And you're from Beit Shemesh, so lo pashet. But coming back here, so Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik, I told you, is a wonderful teacher of science. We had him for chemistry, we loved him, but guys like yours truly, we used to bother him outside of class for endless stories about the Soloveitchik family. But one time in class we got involved with the age of the earth, which was a big problem then. Today, anyone who raises that question, you gotta be crazy. You can believe literally, figuratively. There's so much written on it, and you know, when did the moon and stars start to work? When do we have a concept of time, that the Tiferet Yisrael? So he said to us, we asked him this question because Rav Menachem Kasher came out in English with the first volume of the Torah Shlema, came out in English, and appendix to it were studies on scientific questions. You know, it was a big issue then. And so he said to us, tell me, how old was Adam v'Chava when they were created? So he said, well, it seems, Rebbe, it seems Dr. Soloveitchik, that they were created grown-ups. He said, well, if you looked at them a minute after they were created, how old would you say they would be? 21 years of age. But in reality, they were 1 minute old. So he said, do we, Baruch Shalem, could do this? So that's what the Rebbe is saying, that we can have dinosaurs, and if we have dinosaurs, it could be the whole process God sped up so that it looks like millions of years it took a year. So you can believe either way. But I want to tell you, I'm very moved by what the mayor sent me, because I look back, I kept on thinking, you know, if my grandsons later go to a Mamlachti Dati Torani in what he called it, in Hanof. But it's interesting what happened later. With my eldest grandson, I was Sandek on the brit of my great-grandson earlier this year, and I had to go to mikvah. You know, my grandson says, Saba, I want you to be Sandek, but I have one request, you should go to mikvah. And that's not an easy request for a little shit to swallow, you understand? The Rav didn't go to mikvah, Rav Yom Kippur, you know, Bris did not go to mikvah. And he told us once, you have it on tape, where he's joking around with the class in Moria, and he says to them, oh yeah, Baich, next to Vach, you're very busy next week, it's Erev Yom Kippur, this, that, you gotta go to mikveh, he says, ich genish, but you're busy going to mikveh. So, but alright, when your grandson wants you to go to mikveh to be Sandek, I gave in. I went, gladly. But again, had he been a Chabadnik, these kids could have turned out going to mikveh every day. His two brothers, the younger brothers already are different. I don't see them. It would be interesting to know, had they remained in Rabbi Steinsaltz's school, what would have become with them? All right, if. Now, Baruch Hashem, they're good kids. I have no complaints, but it's interesting. All right, now we're picking up, and I want to finish out the Baron Cutler, and we said last week, again, this, the Sri Dayesh, if you look it up, it's a fabulous source. Where should one teach Torah? Israel or America? Now, this is not a simple dilemma. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe had a certain point of view, and the Rav had a certain point of view. And believe me, and I'll say this now, I'm going to come back to it later, you'll understand how I tie it in. Had the Rav had his way, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein would have never been in the state of Israel. All right, plain and simple. Plain and simple. And anyone who came in Aliyah, you went through this dilemma, because what ultimately happened is you took some of the finest graduates of Yeshivas Reb Yitzchok Chanan, and you planted them in Israel. And from YU's point of view, YU is an Anglo institution, an American institution. They're not interested in building up Israel. They're interested in building up Yiddishkeit in America and Canada. All right, Israel is an afterthought. But Baruch Hashem, the Rav didn't have his way, and Reb Aaron Lichtenstein came in Aliyah. So that's Reb Aaron Cutler, and the story told in the footnote by my chaver, Reb Avraham Abba Weingart, Talmud Mufaka, the Shri Deyesh, is unbelievable. Mir velngein sezaman af de zebel lufshifs. Tzeretz Yisrael will travel together on the same plane. He tells that to Rabbi Fink, and Kachave, Rabbi Fink is flying to take the position in Haifa, and Reb Aaron's body is being brought over for burial on the same plane. That is some story. Okay, and how it happened with the change in venue and what, all right, comment what you wish. Now, so, and we saw Reb Aaron Cutler students from Kletsk, how they related to him. Students who went to Shanghai. Students who went to Siberia. We saw Yossi Tendler last week. It's hard for me to say, Zichrono Levracha, the whole world I know is passing on. I just got notice that a classmate of mine died, Edgar Gross, was a musmach of the yeshiva, was a survivor, went through the hell of the Holocaust. Do you remember Edgar Gross, Yitzchak? Edgar Gross, I think his name was Yerachmiel in Hebrew. A quiet fellow. He got married very late. I don't think he had children. And Elicha, an Elicha individual, Edel. So he lived in Pelham Bay, Pelham Parkway, if I'm not mistaken. He died. He lived in Las Vegas now, and he was ill. I know from my brother, they were friendly. My brother in Las Vegas and Edgar happened to the same shul, and he was ill, and lo aleinu, he died. So, Yossi Tendler, you saw the way he related to Reb Aaron. That already is an American boy who is on his way to the Rav Shir, and Reb Aaron says, and he tells Reb Aaron, how can I go to Lakewood? I need Panasa. And Reb Aaron says to him, I'm older than you. I've had more life experience. Depend upon me that you can learn in Lakewood, and Panasa will work out. And then I quoted, I know that you guys have stung me you stung me on Purim with I look it up in Washington, you know, I refer to, I have a very delicate problem there. I really don't know how to solve it. As a matter of fact, Charlie and Morty, you know me well, if you can give me advice, it's not nice, I say check my books like I'm boasting about my book. I'm not boasting, but I wrote them, I had a purpose, and I can't do everything in class, there's information there. So you say check the books, check Washington. So they're laughing at me in Purim. All right, they have a right to laugh at me in Purim, because I laugh at them all year, they can laugh at me in Purim. But it's not really, I really don't know what to do, what am I going to tell you? But anyway, so I quoted from Washington how a fellow who learned in Lakewood for a short while and went on to YU, the way Rakefet related to Reb Aaron. We said that too, and there's a lot more in Washington that I didn't quote. And I quoted Dershowitz, I quoted everything, I was totally balanced. And Dershowitz, Yitzhak Dershowitz, he already relates to Reb Aaron Cutler with hail, fire, and brimstone, Davar Hashem Bazaar. And I can just hear Reb Aaron shouting, how can you go to college, how can you go to college? How can you waste time? Yeah, it's Yitzchak Dershowitz. It's a second cousin to the famous lawyer Alan Dershowitz. How can you go to college and Reb Aaron shouting the Baal Shem Bazaar, someone who couldn't learn Torah and doesn't learn Torah and wastes his time and doesn't devote himself? And that was Reb Aaron. Okay, and Reb Aaron built Lakewood. It's fascinating. Reb Aaron and the Rav and the Lubavitcher Rebbe all really started their holy work in America exactly the same time. Now you just think for 1 minute. The Rav arrives in America in 1932. I don't want to insult Rabbi Reuben. Murray, I don't want to insult Rabbi Reuben. But believe me, the Rav accomplished very little of lasting, earth-shaking, eternal value in Boston. I don't want to put him down. He was a rabbi. I built a day school. Fine, good. 41, he gives his first shiur in Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchok Hanan as a Rosh Yeshiva. That's when the world began for him. Reb Aaron Cutler gives his first shiur in Lakewood, 42. That's when the world began for him. The sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe gives his first Fabrengen in 41 in Brooklyn. It's amazing. That's when the world began. All three, within months of each other. So we asked the question weeks ago, months ago already, who accomplished more in America? The Rav or the Rebbe? What was the lasting accomplishment? And we discussed it. I'm not here to repeat myself. There's no question the accomplishments are overwhelming, the Torah, the depth. All right, they're two different worlds. Reb Aaron attempted to quote Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, and Rakefet, perhaps I should quote myself here, because I took a thought Reb Aaron touched upon, but I developed it a million times further. The Reb Aaron Cutler attempted to transplant Lithuania in America. The Rav attempted to translate Lithuania into America. And when we made the point, they both had tremendous success with some failure. There's no question about the failure. Many problems intervened. Suffice it to say, who would ever believe that such a percentage of Orthodox Jews would wind up in state penitentiaries, federal penitentiaries, money crimes, recent times, sexual crimes. It is overwhelming. It is beyond comprehension. America, its values, its standards, the land of Obama, no belief, no surrender, no God, just idol worship. Man worships himself, plain and simple. Do whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want, just don't get caught. And it's beyond words. And if you get caught already, there's Sfarim being written, how to observe Yiddishkeit in prison. So I have to say, Lakewood probably has a higher percentage with these. Again, let me not criticize Lakewood, but there's no question the money crimes when you don't have professions and you get involved in business and being a landlord and all that goes with it. Why, you on the other hand, because it's open and it interacts with the Western world, the Western culture. I don't have to tell you what came out of YU, new types of Judaism, new types of worship, Shira Chadasha. Rakefet called it conservative Judaism 10 years ago. Everyone laughed at Rakefet. 10 years later, Rakefet is on top of the world. Thank you very much for the Frimer article. Fabulous, fabulous article. By the way, you see, he consults a lot with Reb Menashe Klein. It ties in with my Sunday class, right? I'll get to it in due course. God should spare me down the years. It's fascinating. But the new tradition that's coming out has a major article. It's, over 200 pages on giving women aliyah, of Shira Chadasha. You have to see it to believe it. The footnotes, the lumdis. Kalakavod to Aryeh and Dov Frimer. Kalakavod, that's all I can say. I'm proud that such an article was published, because it's not, you know, to take a whole issue and devote it to this topic. Kalakavod. So this is why you, Lakewood, it's not that every Lakewood product was a total tzaddik, a total saint, I know some far from it, but they didn't establish new institutions of Judaism. Why, you already has a different problem. The only exception being Rabbi Dr. Professor David Hartman, who is one quarter began in a Chabad elementary school, high school Chaim Berlin, Lakewood, then NYU. So four institutions share in David Hartman. So, alright, they had tremendous success, and I don't know that the success is overwhelming. The very fact that we're sitting in this room, and well, the room filled up, kolek avod, and I salute my students who came, Chaim and Moshe, I add you to the honorable list. If you have a bus of a chalav v'chinah, and to come to hear Rakefetz Narishkai, kolek avod. Anyway, Moshe, listen carefully. The achievements are overwhelming. The problems are real. But there's another problem that I want to relate to. And here with Rabarin, we'll never know because this problem begins long after he is gone, at least 7-8 years afterwards. The Rav already related to it. Who could believe that Hasidus could conquer the world? And you don't have to go any further than the fellows here in this kollel. And there's one of the Talmidim, the Kollel, is Tuvia Brander. So Tuvia Brander comes to me and says, did you watch the Chag HaSmicha? Oh, the Chag HaSmicha, I had half my students, if you recall, that Sunday. They were upstairs watching New York, and Rekefet is downstairs teaching. All right. Why do I have to watch the Chag HaSmicha? It was my Chag. It was 50th anniversary of my Chag HaSmicha, although technically I got Smicha 3 years. 3 years earlier, but the Chag was 64, if I'm correct. So I was invited, 50th anniversary, knew Chav Sain Gutmeshug to spend $2,000 to go to America to the Chag HaSmicha to have them lift the toast to me. Big deal. If someone would say they said over a shiur of mine, that would be a lot better than a toast, believe me. So but Kenny says, Kenny, Tuvia says, I'll send you a link. I say, fine, send me a link. And in my office, I'm linked on to the Chag HaSmicha. I've already watched 30 minutes. I understand I have 3 more hours to go, as I explained yesterday. And when you look at the Chag HaSmicha, the Rosh Yeshiva, my colleagues are marching in. Ribbono Shel Olam, everyone is dressed the same. Everyone looks the same. The only difference is some have a beard that's 1 foot long, some have a beard that's 8 inches long, some have a beard that's 16 inches long. Everyone, I couldn't believe how many, they're sitting in an auditorium. I never yet saw the Rav sit in an auditorium with his hat on. Where I come from, you come into an auditorium, you're going to give a shiur, you're going to speak. The first thing you do, you take off your hat, you take off your coat. I remember when Reb Chaim Heller came in, I saw this with my own eyes. If you want to know what Kavodat Torah is, I see it with my own eyes, how the Rav would stop his shiur and run over to Reb Chaim Heller in front of 2,000 people in Lamport Auditorium and take his Rebbe's coat and his Rebbe's hat and sit his Rebbe down. That was Kavodat Torah. Who said, here everyone has a hat, Hasidus conquered the world. I'm a Litvak, I live in Volozhin, I'm happy in Volozhin, but I have to admit, Volozhin is God. We can't influence anymore. It's a different world. The world shifted, the world changed. Why did Hasidus conquer the world? And Hasidus, you've got to understand, I'm not playing games now, I'm being very serious. What is the heart of Hasidus? It's building a moving ghetto around you. There was a Purim joke that they're selling screens that you can blow up, you know, someone sent it to me from the internet, that if you are sitting on a plane, you can put a screen around you, so you don't interact with the women there, with the chveis, because some there, the men, you're walking on the street, you're in the subway, imagine the New York subway, what Reb Moshe Feinstein had to deal with, what Reb Menashe Klein had to deal with, they all got these shilas during the summer, during the winter, Mela, so women are covered up. During the summer, women can be on the subways in bikinis. It's New York. Everyone has their sacred rights. So you can blow up the screen around you and protect yourself. No, this is Hasidus. It's a fabulous idea. You dress a certain way. The minute you dress a certain way, I can do any sin in the world and no one can stop me. I have freedom of choice. What, I look like a Jew? What, I can walk in, I can do this, I can whatever I want. I can buy and sell and eat and do. No one can stop me. A chassid, boy, for him to sin, he has to shave off his beard, cut off his payas, throw away his black clothes. Then the next day, Yavil gain some Rebbe, he has no beard, he has no payas, he has no black clothes, he's finished. So you see, Hasidus is fabulous. You dress a certain way, we're part of the club, we act a certain way, we're part of the club. This is Hasidus. It conquered the world. It conquered the world. We think a certain way. Now, how would Rabbaran and the Rav react to this? Rabbaran, we will never know. You want my inner guess? Whenever I meet the old-time students of Lakewood from my era, we are positive Rabbaran would be happy. That Rav Malkiel Kotler stands with the Satmar Rebbe. The Rabbaran Kotler, I don't want to use strong words, you use the word, but he was totally opposed to what Satmar did. It cost Rabbaran Kotler millions of dollars, and today's money, billions. They didn't vote in the election. Aguda couldn't get enough seats. Power in Israel. Israel, unfortunately, is not yet Malchut Beit David. It is a democracy. Democracy? Terrible. Yeah, democracy terrible? Go live in communist Russia and you'll kiss the ground that you live in a democracy. Before I worked for the Mossad in communist Russia, I poked fun. I was a big fan of Alexis de Tocqueville, you know, his critique of American democracy. Are you familiar with de Tocqueville? It was written in the 1840s, 1850s. It's before the Civil War. He's very insightful. Democracy is terrible. A day like this, they'll take a vote in kindergarten. Oh, children, it's a beautiful day outside. How many kids want to go to the playground? 24 kids raise their hand. How many kids want to go to the library? One vote. Morty Tarrigan votes go to the library. 24 kids are laughing at you. Think like this. De Tocqueville hit the nail on the head. But, my dear students, we have nothing better than democracy. Okay? Israel is a democracy. Look at Lapid. Though that moronic gangster in Beit Shemesh who spat at that little girl, at the Mongolese girl, he changed the course of Torah history. From their point of view, one individual destroyed Torah history. Al-Pidin, he's a rodef. I don't know how they let him walk around. Al-Pidin, he changed the whole course of Torah history. Lapid votes. Had Rabban Kotler, had Satmar behind him. Oh, what could have happened? They would have had another seat, another two seats, another three seats. Chinuch Atzmai, more money. Finally, I could have got power. And you got Menachem Begin, and you don't have to raise money for Chinuch Atzmai now. It is all covered by my taxes, your taxes. All right, this is a democracy. I'm not certain Rabban would be thrilled with what came out of Lakewood today, but Rabban is not around. However, the Rav was around. And with the Rav, we have unbelievable sources how much he was upset with this conquering of a Litvisha outlook, Litvisha thought. It was overwhelming to him. At times he couldn't believe it. Couldn't make his peace with it. Let me quote to you from a volume called The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. I'm quoting from volume 2. Somehow the name of the author escapes me today. And here's the Rav, very, very important quote. This is going to carry over into the next lectures, which don't go for nothing, that's for sure. I'm quoting from page 238. And I'm quoting Rabbi Beryl Rosenzweig of Kew Gardens. And Rabbi Rosenzweig is talking about the Rav, and they're talking about his son. His son, I think you might recognize the name, Rabbi Dr. Michael Rosenzweig, who once was a little kid, growing up, a Gaon Adir. And Beryl says, the Rav once gave me a powerful insight into the changing character of orthodoxy. We were talking about my son, and the Rav said to me, when you were a student at the yeshiva, who were your heroes? And he did not even wait for me to answer. He said, quote, this is the Rav speaking, Rabbis Leo Young, Joseph Lipstein, Herbert S. Goldstein. And then he said to me, tell me, who are the heroes of your son? Certainly not these people. Their models are their Rashi Yeshiva, the people who represent learning and scholarship. And you see, this shift began. The rabbis in America ultimately become very secondary, to a certain degree very unimportant. Name one famous rabbi today who has influence like a Rosh Yeshiva. Rosh Yeshiva took over America. Alright? This part of the swing to the right didn't bother the Rav. He's just calling your attention to it. Although I have to say, the Rav had great admiration for Rabbis Young, Lichtenstein, and Goldstein, particularly Rabbi Lichtenstein. Very fascinating. And this goes back to Boston, because in the 1930s, I just heard Rakefet dismissed the Rav. Let me tell you, Rakefet is a dummy. I disagree with him. He dismissed what the Rav did in the 30s. The Rav had a different dream then. He wanted to be a successful American rabbi. And he always admired Rabbi Lichtenstein. Look into the Rav, where the author quotes the Rav speaking about Rabbi Lichtenstein, how he was able to take Yiddishkeit and polish it and present it in a way that every successful American could adopt it and adapt himself to what Torah is all about. He had admiration for Rabbi Lichtenstein. It's very interesting. But you see, this was a statement, and on this level, the Rav was very happy. What troubled the Rav, and I'll give you sources in a minute, what troubled the Rav was what went beyond the swing to the right and dedication to the Rashi Yeshiva. What troubled the Rav was when Rosh Yeshiva became like Hasidic Rebbeim and students reacted to them like Hasidim. And with that comes the entire gamut of Hasidic concepts. We have to look alike. We have to dress alike. We have to think alike. There is no room for difference, no room for innovation, no room for creativity. We are all the same. And this troubled the Rav. V'lashon, no two Talmidim dressed alike. When I learned in Lakewood, no one, but no one, would dare to wear a black hat. The only one who wore a Rabban Shehut was the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabban Kotla. Even the Alta Mashgiach, Rav Nosson Bachvogel, wore a brown hat. Students, hats, caps, schmaps, anything under the sun. You had a daven, you had to wear a hat, Kisui Rosh. Right, I'm not going into the halacha question, fine. who dressed the lamb? Now, one time, and this you can hear on tape, I hope these tapes will be made available one day. By the way, you should know, something I published here was challenged. I couldn't have said this in the Kollel, in this Kollel, more than 20 years ago. My rebellion told me differently. I said, what, you're challenging my intellectual honesty? I brought a tape in of the Rav speaking. I told you what happened afterwards. This individual, he lives in Israel. I'm still in touch with him. My daughter knows him. He lives in Israel. Baruch Hashem, married, many children. Interesting individual. I played the Rav. 3 straight weeks I played the Rav. And he made a party, and this hurt me. He made a celebration where he burned his black hat and put on a kippah shrugah. I said, I'm not here for you to take off your black hat. I'm just here for you to be intellectually honest. But he was so angry at his rebellion in America, he threw his black hat into the flames and put on a kippah. So one time the Rav is speaking in the holes of the house. Do you recognize the name? This is part of the Rav's life. Rabbi Emanuel Holzer. Who is Rabbi Emanuel Holzer? Rabbi Emanuel Holzer was a yeshiva boy, and he married a wonderful girl from the Dyckman family. His father-in-law owned property. So Manny Holzer was in the rabbinate, then he left the rabbinate to help his father-in-law. So cynics used to, you know, I used to hear rabbinic colleagues of ours say about Manny Holzer, yeah, he has time in his hands because he works for his father-in-law. And I used to say, if you had time on your hands, what would you do? You'd waste the time. He devotes every spare moment to the Rav. And you got to give him all the credit in the world. Manny Holzer became a Shem Dover. He drove the Rav around. He helped the Rav. He took over Kashrut. He was the Tzar of Kashrut, represented the RCA with the OU on Kashrut. Manny became an expert in Kashrut. He had the time. Yes, he had the time. He didn't have to work. He could afford to devote himself. He helped his father-in-law. He could help his father-in-law with the real estate holdings, with etc. He could do it at his time. When the Rav needed him, Manny jumped up and Manny was there. And Manny became very close to the Rav, and the Rav leaned on Manny. In other words, he felt comfortable with Manny. Manny, he's not well today, should have refuah shleima. You don't know what a wonderful individual, the dedication to the Rav. One time I stayed in the Holzer house, I wanted to bring a gift, so Malka and I figured out one time Manny's driving the Rav to the airport, and snow, no planes. And the Rav had to sleep over in Manny's home in Kew Gardens Hills for 2 nights. We had a plaque made up here in Israel before he went to America. We knew we'd see the Holzers. The Rav slept here with the dates that he slept in their house. So Manny, two of his children, became shamashim to the Rav. Because the Rav was so close, not only was he Masadic Kedushin, I'm talking about David and Barry, Rabbi David Holzer, Rabbi Dr. MD psychiatrist Barry Holzer, the Rav became very close. And then there'd be Sherev Rechus in the Holzer home, and the Rav spoke. And the Rav, you have him on tape where the Rav says, I'm quoting word by word. And by the way, I did not put this into the Rav because I felt it was too sharp. It was just too sharp. But this is the Rav. At ease with his friends, he says, Rabbi Holzer and I share a secret. We remember the world when it was normal. What kind of world do we have today? Everyone looks alike, thinks alike, dresses alike. It is if we have one goal in life, to tell our neighbors, we are just like you, we are just as firm as you, we are no different than you. And when we live with this mentality, there's no creativity, there's no individuality, there can never be a Reb Chaim again. Word by word what I just told you. it's recorded. It'll surface. I guarantee you 100 years from now, it will be in the public domain. Okay? Yosef Mordechai, you'll tell me in 100 years whether I'm right or wrong. What I did quote, page 238 again, the Rebbe is addressing the faculty of the Wurzweiler School of Social Work of Yeshiva University, 1974. I will tell you frankly, the American Ben Torah, good yeshiva student, has achieved great heights on an intellectual level. However, experientially, he is simply immature. When it comes to Jewish religious experience, people of 30 and even 40 years of age are immature. They act like children and experience religion like children. As a result, Jewish youth is inclined and very disposed to accept extremist views. They do this to such an extent that my own students examine my tzitzit to see whether they are long enough. The youth is extremely pious, but also very inconsiderate. Sometimes they drive matters to absurdity. Why? Because they have no experience. Their experience is very childish, simply infantile. When it comes to experiencing the emotional components of religion, boys who are really learned simply act like children. This is why they accept all types of fanaticism and superstition. Sometimes they are even ready to do things which border on the immoral. They lack the experiential component of religion and simply substitute obscurantism for it. I have never seen such obscurantism as I see among some of my students today. After all, I come from the ghetto, yet I have never seen so much naive and uncritical commitment to people and to ideas as I see in America. This is the main problem that we have today. And he goes on and on this vein. And to put it very simply, in the Lushan, your mind was the heart of your existence. You thought. You could be critical. Rashi Yeshiva, remember I told you I was flabbergasted in Lakewood when I saw the lions, the Arayot Shabbachabura, would cut Rabbanan off in the middle of the shir. And then it took many years. I'm going to talk about this at Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, faculty at the talk I give for them. It took many years for me to understand what was happening. This was the tradition in Europe. A Rosh Yeshiva was saying, Yeshia, you sat there, your mind was fighting his mind, your intellect was challenging his intellect. There was no automatic cover given. It was a battle between the great lion and the young lions in front of him. Chassidic Rebbe, were you ever a Fabrenian? No? I challenge you to tell me when you saw someone from the audience cut off the Lubavitcher Rebbe with a source that contradicted him. Lo haya velo nivra. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Gadol Mirabim Shemo, when you call it Torah Kulu Baal Peh, I can say Eidit Nimanatazeh. So we'll speak about contemporaries. You heard the Belzer Rebbe? When were you at the Belzer Rebbe last, Charlie? You heard the Belzer Rebbe speak? Show me one chassid jump up and cut off the bells. You cut off the bells of Rebbe, you're dead. Within 1 second, 30 guys, each one weighing 300 kilo, will be on top of you. You understand? There's a tremendous difference here. And thinking And black is beautiful. The Rav never wore a black hat. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was a shtickel al litvak, you all know, he came to America, he didn't own a black hat. The gray hat, the famous forgery, where they colored in the gray hat black, but Baruch Hashem, the black hats, the real picture surfaced, and you notice today when Lubavitch publishes the picture, no one covers it, colors it in black, because there was such an outcry. But the Rav wore brown hats, gray hats. I never ever saw him with a black hat. And he had a very hard time, and he goes on and on. And I can tell you, I add to you, Bididi Havi Yufna, I have a footnote on this. Bididi Havi Yufna. When I went in Aliyah, we were youngsters. I was 31. We had never lived here. A different world, and you know, we were poor little kids. I had been in the rabbinate. I made 4,000 from my shtela, 4,000 from Rosh Yeshiva YU, $8,000 a year. Yeah, we got to Israel 68. That's due to Mr. Joe Gris. Again, I tell the story, pardon me for saying it, in Washington. I don't want to go into detail now, but I'm only sitting here because of Mr. Gris, and we're only in this building that belonged to Mr. Gris because of Rakefet. It's an interesting Hashgacha Pratit story. So overnight, our salaries doubled from the yeshiva, the Rebbe. Ach, what a story. It's hard to believe it all, but I reproduced the letter from Dr. Belkin in Washington because I know people will say Rakefet made it up. All right, the document is there. So, where was I, Mr. Gris, the Rav? Why you? Oh, so we never thought we'd see America again when we came in Aliyah. And 77, the Israeli government sent me back to speak at the RCA convention. 78, I went back that summer to teach for Chevret Aliyah Toranit, which I helped organize. CAT, you don't know anything about it, doesn't exist today. But we was a shoot off from Machon Gold and BMT, the idea being that boys and girls could meet, and anyone coming to their affairs was interested in Aliyah, so that you didn't have to worry about approaching a girl or approaching a boy and thinking, is she interested in Aliyah? Is he interested in Aliyah? Here, anyone in the room, you're interested in Aliyah. A lot of shidduchim came out of 78 and 82 summers that I taught in New York for CAT. So while I'm teaching for CAT, we went up to Boston for a long weekend, and I spent Shabbat with the Rav. And the Rav was in his original home, although he was living with his daughter, but he ate meals there and then walked back to his house, 10 Hancock Road, I believe, with the address. Yitzhak, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think the Twesties lived in Addington Place, am I pronouncing it right? And the Rav lived on Hancock Road. And there were a few fellas there who came up for Shabbat, the Rav's Talmidim. Among them was a Talmud of mine, Rabbi Chaim Milson, who arguably may be the Rav's top student out of the 70s. And the Rav calls me aside, and the Rebbe says to me, this is after we spoke all day in learning, and we walked back and forth, and I knew a little bit already at that time. When I got smicha, I knew nothing. But by 78, I knew a little bit, thanks to my students, Tamidaya Tamigulam, the Gemara in Kindit, Tafsayim. So the Rav calls me aside and says to me, I want you to know, my students of today, they know how to learn Nishkasha, ganz gut, but they're crazy. Don't listen to their hashkafes on general studies, on Zionism. So I thought the Rav was, you know, playing a game with me. He knows Rakeshet has a doctorate, and I'm a Zionist, you know, I'm everything that the Rav believed in, so he's making me feel good. You should know, 1 year later, Rabbi Aaron Bat, Rabbi Bat, remember Rabbi Bat, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, God, it hurts to think he's gone already a number of years, Aaron Bat. Aaron Bat, the salt of the earth! He was the Rav's Talmud. He taped the Rav. He knew the Rav. He knew the Rav from New England. He was in Connecticut. So Aaron Bat goes to visit the Rav. The Rav calls him aside, and exactly what he told me, he tells Aaron Bat. So Aaron Bat comes back, and he tells me the story. I say, now I feel better. I thought the Rav was playing to his audience. Now I see this is really Rebbe. But now I give you one final source that says it all. You don't have to believe Aaron Rakefet. You don't have to believe Aaron Bat. But I challenge anyone in this room, anyone listening to this shiur, you're not going to believe Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, the third Aaron? Oh boy. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, we're going to believe B'Lev V'Nefesh. And in page 241, I quote the tradition article that Rabbi Aaron wrote about the Rav. And no one said it better. In a moment of striking candor, when my colleague Rav Yehuda Amital first visited these shores, USA, almost 20 years ago, the Rav commented to him, quote, "You know, I have devoted Talmidim, very devoted Talmidim. If I were to announce a shiur at 2 o'clock in the morning, they would come en blanc. And yet, deep in their hearts, they think I'm an apikores." End quote. The remark was laced with characteristic humor and confined, presumably, to a select group. Nevertheless, it gave vent to a genuine, if painful, sentiment. And there's no question, the Rav lost the battle. Hasidus won out. There's a fabulous tape of the Rav giving shir in Moriah. And in Moriah, he had very fascinating balabatim. The whole Moriah crowd essentially was a Hasidic crowd. These were diamond dealers. Palisha diamond dealers, Belgian diamond dealers. There were a few Svadim there from Egypt, but it was essentially a crowd with Hasidic roots. And the Rav, at times in Moriah, it wasn't in the classroom, he would deal with issues that were Balabatasha issues. And one time the Rav flew off the handle, as a Rebbe is wont to do in the middle of a shiur, and he says, "Don America, here in America, mitracht min ken hoben chassidus, ze vet nish zayn wie die alte Heim. You're not going to succeed like the old country." And some balabas, and we're talking these are balabatim, you know, who gave heavy money to the causes the Rav advocated. The Rav was not exactly totally independent of these balabatim. That's why we spoke about Chinuch Atzmai, the dinner. Why did they ask the Rav to speak? Because they knew if the Rav speaks at the dinner, it opens up Moriah congregation for Chinuch Atzmai. And they were right. So a balabas cuts the Rav off from the audience. And he says, "Oh, what's me?" He says, "Doch Hasidish." And you know, this has to be late 50s, I would say, early 60s. And the Rev shoots back at him, "I'll bring you a proof that I'm right. Avu studiat ayazun. Where's your son study? Yeshiva University. I learned Bamir." You know, as if to say, you think a Hasidish hyphen, a Hasidic yeshiva. All right, who is right, the Rav or the Balabas who cut him off? Interesting question. I'll tell you what happened in America. In America, wow, you keep your money wrapped up. What's going on here? It's not so bad. Times are not that bad. Believe me, times are going to be very good this morning when that judge is finished. Gentlemen, my dear students, who was right? Who was right? I'll tell you what happened in America. They were both right. They were both wrong. Yes, Hasidus conquered America. but it's an American Hasidus today. You got to give credit. It's an American Hasidus. It is at home in the Western world. It's learned how to communicate. The Babich is beyond words the way they have succeeded. Even with Putin, take a look what's going on in Russia. I don't want to say communist Russia. Take a look when Putin overruns the Ukraine, Crimea. Who's sitting in the audience applauding him? The Chabad chief rabbi of Russia, Rabbi Lazar, Beryl Lazar. You have no idea how much criticism there was. And you got to read the websites. And he defends himself very ably. I'm interested in Jewish life. To be good friends with Putin helps Yiddishkeit in the former Soviet Union. And boy, he hit the nail on the head. But it's not only Chabad. You take a look in America, Bava. You take a look today, Bells. You take a look, Gare. In the United States, I'm talking about. They have integrated very beautifully on the American scene. They're not schnurrers. They can't sit in the kollel indefinitely. They have to go out to work. You go in, Bernie Lander, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander was a genius. You understand? I know if I say this in YU territory, they're going to give me a demerit. All right, give me a demerit. I'll suffer a little. But Bernie Lander was a genius. Did you ever look at Flatbush? The big building opposite Flatbush Yeshiva. Who studies there? Who goes there? Separate classes, men, women, separate days, separate floors, whatever they do, all right? Baruch Hashem. Men and women, yeah, it's a terrible thing, but you got to keep them apart. I don't know. I must lack that male drive to, I don't know, I can't. I mean, Loto face it, sir. You have to live in a world with men and women. Not every man walks, I don't want to go further, but God have mercy what they think of men. Women. All right, but that's the reality. Who goes there? You see Chassidim getting master degrees. In the heart of Borough Park, there's an institution, it's called Machon Leparnasa. So Bernie Lander explained to me, if he would open up there and call it a college, they put him in Chayrim, it's Borough Park. Machon Leparnasa. Computer geniuses walking in, walking out. I told you, it's Borough Park in the Shtibble White Dove, and I told you what they pulled on me there. They say to me, in Lakewood, they don't learn the Book of Job. And I forfeit. I say, why not? Say for you, if you don't learn it, you can't understand human destiny. So they say, no, but they'll see the word Job, job. A Lakewood boy will see the word job, pachad. Work is a curse. In Borough Park, they're all working. Yeah, they're all working. The stores, the what's going on. Now there's a guy in Borough Park. I couldn't believe my eyes. He has the little, for kids to put together, to build Playmobil, I think it's called. Hasidish Yidden, women with shekels and tichels on top. It's unbelievable. These guys conquered the world. It's all right. It's not the Hasidic world of the Alter Haim. And I would like to think, I don't know, maybe I'm being naive, maybe Basheva Singer is right. I would like to think that in the old country, they didn't have to put cameras into mikvot. You understand? What's going on now, they just put cameras into mikvot. I don't have to elaborate. For men, mikvot for men, they put cameras to photograph what's going on, that chas v'chalila, there shouldn't be pedophiles at work. So, God have mercy. The Rav was right and the Rav was wrong. That Balabas was wrong and he was right. Okay? Fascinating. This is the reality, this is the truth. And I just had to admit to my daughter, I have one daughter who's into the Maharan, and I have a grandson already. It's a different from a different daughter. Last night he told me a story. I got home from teaching. I caught Mariv, and I can barely speak, barely walk, and I'm wiped out. It was a shiur yesterday. All right, I hope on a level. I hope you agree. Baruch Hashem. And my grandson tells me on the way to Bezalel, he sees this kid on the bus without a yarmulke. He's learning Likutei Maran. He's going to Hebrew U because they get off at Batsalos now on the Hebrew U campus till they finish the new multi-billion-dollar building in the center of town. And he says to me, this kid kissed the Maharan. And he says, my grandson, who's a Hezda boy and whatnot, he says to me, the Maran is not like learning Gemara. Maran is Eish. It's fire. This kid is going to be influenced. It's fire. It catches. And I told my daughter the other day, I admit that the literature world must have some chassidus in it today. And he said, Abba, when did you wise up? I say, well, it's a gradual process. Watching my children come out and watching my students, it's a gradual process. And I can tell you between the lines, this really hurts, because if you recall Matei Alon, which you lived in Rehovot, you didn't see, but my wife and I once wanted to see Mark Tivo Shel Ubezel. What is there that so attractive? We had two grandsons who went to Hakolta because of Rabbi Matei Alon. And my daughter did all the legal work for Hakolta pro bono because of Rabbi Alon. And my son-in-law, and so Friday night we went to a Fabringen at I think it was at the Plaza Hotel, or no, it was at the Great Synagogue in the basement. And I want to tell you, it was like walking into Chabad, walking into a Fabringen with the Rebbe. A mob scene, endless fellas with kippot shrugot, endless girls who knitted the kippot shrugot. It was a mob scene, and Matei Alon and his father, Professor Menachem Alon, and Sharansky, and who wasn't there? And it was exactly singing in Divrei Torah, and singing in Divrei Torah. I lose a chinuch. Okay, one final question. Great success, not total success. Chassidic world wiped out by Hitler. Polish Jewry, 90% wiped out. Out of that 90%, at least half were Chassidic. And yet, what a story of rebirth. It's one of the great achievements of the last century. And the Talmud asked me, and a very interesting comment, I don't want to mention his name, of course I differ with him, and I'm going to describe him. A YU boy, a good YU boy. But part of this move to the right, his children already are getting a more right-wing education. And he came to see me, it's a few weeks ago, and he said to me, the Baron Cutler, the Rav, who accomplished more? Whose accomplishment is more lasting? And he was positive, the Baron Cutler. Alright, YU was on the map. YU, as you saw from the Chag HaSmicha, a student just spoke with me this morning, he was at the Chag HaSmicha, he came back overwhelmed, empowered. He said the Rav Rosenzweig spoke so beautifully. He said before Rav Heschel's got up, they introduced him, tremendous applause, which shows you, despite all his detractors, Baruch Hashem. Why you? But Rav Aaron, Lakewood, the yeshiva, the city, Bar Kayama, Shane Duffa, who accomplished more? And I was perhaps the right person to ask, because I have good feeling for Rabbi Aaron and good feeling for the Rav, obviously. And I try to be balanced. And I've been thinking about this question, and I reached the exact opposite conclusion. And I'm going to prove it to you irrefutably. I could quote 50 different chazal to back me up. Lakewood is Lakewood. But the Rav had three children, among them a daughter named Tova. And Tova married a Talmud of the Rav, who in his own right, didn't matter who he would marry, he was a Gaon Adir, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. But you gotta talk about Tova, because the Medrash Rabbah says in Bereshis, Hakol Acharei HaIsha. Everything we achieve in life is due to our wives. It's absolutely true. I've seen Gedol Yisrael, and I've seen Iluyim. Gedol Yisrael all have wives that help them achieve, polish them, finish them, Hakol Acharei HaIsha, finish the product. Iluyim remain Iluyim, and their impact is limited. So Tova married Reb Aaron. And they came in Aliyah. I will give credit. Friends of theirs named Rothkopf came a year or two before them, and they consulted, they helped pave the way for them. You can come, you can achieve, you can find your place here. And Reb Aaron comes, and he goes to an area that you couldn't even go to on your own. You had to wait for a military patrol to go from Yerushalayim to the Gush. Do you remember that or not? 71, 72. And they built a yeshiva there. Har Etzion, which today is the largest Hasidic yeshiva in the state of Israel. But that's not... How did they build the yeshiva? The whole area became extremely unique. Built the yeshiva, built the yeshiva, built the settlement. The kibbutz in that reopened. The memory of the Lamed Hay. Not only that. Another Talmud of the Rav, who was part of that same Chabura in the late 50s. By the name of Steve Riskin, Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. He came in Aliyah. And where did he build this kingdom? Efrat. Why Efrat? Because the Gush was there. Alon Shvat was there. Moskowitz. These are all interconnected. Now, when I view the situation in the year 2015, Lakewood is Lakewood. Look at Gush Etzion. Look what's been built. Look what exists. And it all goes back to one yeshiva, Har Etzion. Son-in-law, daughter, grandchildren. Who's the Rosh Yeshiva today? As Chazal say, a son in the image of his father, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, grandson of the Rav. Who accomplished more? They all accomplished great things. But in my heart, I have to go with the descendants of the Rav. Eretz Yisrael, Admat HaKodesh. What did Chazal have to say? The famous Yushami, Achav. Other kings, Rishayim. But they built new areas in Eretz Yisrael. They never lost in battle. They were blessed. So I differ. Lakewood is Lakewood. I'd be very happy to see Lakewood al Admat HaKodesh. Bring it all. And build further. Look what happened. My dear students, we have arrived. At this point on, anyone who remains in the room is adding $36,000 linked to the shekel. Don't want that rotten dollar that loses value. On the IOUS. Chaim, write it all down. Baruch Hashem, no one is leaving. Aye, the Rebbe's a fool. He never collects, doesn't touch money. But let it be an example to you. Young rabbis, you know how I began in the rabbinate? Now I'll tell you the truth. This is how I began. I came to Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania, young rabbi. I get a call from a very prominent rabbi. Rav Rotkopf, Ichobfa Aicha Hechsha Bakery. I have a hechsha to give you, a bakery. If it machen gute geld, you'll get good money. I say to the rabbi, I don't understand. Why are you leaving? He says, well, you know, my father just died and there's going to be a whole question who goes into the slaughterhouse to succeed him. And I don't want people to throw at me that I give a hechsher to a bakery that's open Shabbos. I mean, this was Philadelphia, 61. I say to him, very innocently, a du kannst nicht geben, if you can't give a hechsher, how can I give a hechsher? They're open Shabbos. Says to me, Rabbi Rotkopf, ihr wilt nicht sein reich? You don't want to be wealthy? You can fill in the rest. 1 year later, I wind up in Maplewood, South Orange, which until today, in my next Gilgal, I'm going to be a Hasidic Rebbe, and I have a title, the Maplewood Rebbe, because you can't be a Rebbe without a name of a community from the diaspora. All right, I'm the Maplewood Rebbe. I admit it, I could have been a Hasidic Rebbe. You got to know how to play the game, but you can be a Hasidic Rebbe. I have the Kehila, all right, and I found Yichus. I'm going to reveal my Yichus in my public talk in YU on Bernard Rebbe. Fine. So I come there, and there was an Elter Rebbe. And I was friendly with all the Rabbanim. We were very close, the Elter Rabbanim, the younger Rabbanim. I was the youngest. So I went to visit this Rebbe on his deathbed. And he says to me, I'll never forget, I don't want to mention his name, but some of you old timers from Essex County will know immediately. He says to me on his deathbed, "Oi, Harav Rotkopf, Chazaya Chayunga, I gotta speak English, I'm sorry. I see you a young man. I want to give you a bracha that America shouldn't corrupt you with the kashrut the way it corrupted me. And I want to tell you, a few months later was his funeral. I was at the funeral. Hundreds of Jews, tens of the heads of the mafia were there, Taliana. This is Newark at that time. And his partner in Heksha from Jersey City is Masper him. And the height of his Hesper is, Mi am gekenten treuern mit $1 million. On Adam, that this rabbi who died was so honest that you could trust him with $1 million. You didn't need witnesses. You'd say, can I have my $1 million back? He'd give it to you. And I walked out of that hesped. Wow, I hope that that doesn't happen to me. That after 120 years, they're going to say my greatest achievement in life was that you could give me $1 billion without witnesses and trust me. Then it was $1 million, today it'd be $1 billion, you understand? So you're going into the rabbinate. I hope you remember you had a Rebbe once who didn't touch money. Baruch Hashem. We have arrived. I'm coming to a topic where, unfortunately, or fortunately, who knows, I'm the only person probably left standing who knows all the details, more or less. Problem is what to say, what not to say, because when you get involved in issues like this, there's a lot of rechilat, a lot of lashon hara. Humans are humans, and this is the way God made the world. We have to live with the reality. By 1940, everything is changing, the world is changing, the world is shifting, but let's not forget, it all began in 1886 with a little elementary yeshiva on the east side of New York called Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim then gave birth to Yeshiva Shetzis Kolchan in 1897, when graduates of Eitz Chaim, Rabbi Matlin's son graduates, kid is going to Seward Park High School, and Rabbi Matlin wants him to learn a little Gemara. So after school, he says, bring a few of your friends, and I'll give you a Gemara share. Rabbi Matlin was a member of RJJ's based in. The share expanded, so many kids started coming, probably because their parents were kicking them to come and giving them treats and pennies to go, that he had to get out of the house, go into the Marion Pohl Synagogue, And by 1897, they get a charter. The Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary, Yeshiva Teitz Chaim. They change the name from Yeshiva Teitz Chaim to Yeshiva Shvitz Elchanan. And you all know a number of years later, they combine, and out of that combination comes Talmudical Academy, comes Yeshiva College, comes Rabbi Revel, the Meshit Eilui, the Soloveitchik family. And suddenly, while all this is happening, the expansion and conquering the American scene, and now you're having American rabbis who can preach equally well in English or in Mamalushin, in Yiddish. Equally well, Rabbi Hollander, David Hollander, Zichrona Levracha, Rabbi Heschel Schachter, Zichrona Levracha, that generation. Rabbi Gilbert Klapperman should live and be well, Arichat Yomim Tovim. Equally at home, English, Hebrew, English, Yiddish. And you have the shift to the right, at least in a very nascent, primitive form. But it's there. The refugees are pouring in. Gedolei Reshi Yeshiva. Gedolei Hasidic Rebbeim. You know what that means? The Lubavitcher Rebbe comes to America, the sixth Rebbe. And YU, what today is YU, then it was Yeshiva and Yeshiva College, but I'll call it YU simply for the sake of being understood well. YU has tremendous tragedy. Rabbi Revel dies December 2nd, 1940. Beit Kislev, the correspondent that year. Rabbi Revel was ill. He was suffering. He had heart trouble, the depression and all that went with it. It was not an easy decade for him. And he dies young, all of 55 years of age. What's even more shocking is that within a few weeks, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik passes on. And this is within a few weeks. This is something that it's inconceivable. January 31st, I believe it was, 1941. Within literally January 31st, a few weeks. Yeshiva's caught up with a tremendous quandary. Its leadership is wiped out basically overnight. And now Yeshiva faces two tremendous challenges. We need a Rosh Yeshiva with the stature of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and we need the Rosh Yeshiva and president with the stature of Rabbi Revel. Now remember, the role models for the yeshiva's leadership were very different than they are today. Today, Zalman Zayin Gesund, you have Richard Joel, should live and be well, president of Yeshiva University. Richard Joel is the greatest chazan who has ever been president of Yeshiva University. Rabbi Lamb is not a chazan. Rabbi Belkin was not a chazan. Rabbi Revel was not a chazan. Richard Joel, have you heard him daven? Fabulous. If he trained his voice and went professional, he could live a good life, make a good living, and not have the worries that he has today. But today, that's what yeshiva needed. It's different concepts. Rabbi Lamb, Rabbi Belkin. Rabbi Belkin tried desperately to remain a Rebbe in the yeshiva, but it became impossible. The demands on his time were too great. Rabbi Revel was not just the president. He was a Rosh Yeshiva, pshuto k'mashma'o. He gave a shir once a week to the rabbinic students. He was a bucky in Shas. Dalet Chalte Shulchan Aruch, basically he gave shirim and choshen mishpat. No other Rebbe touched it. And here you have to replace both Reb Moshe and Rabbi Rava. More than that. I'll give you sources. I just want to give you an overture. But every word I'm saying, we have sources for. More than that. Kol Zman, there was no competition. Yeshiva College had the total support of the Agudas HaRabbanim. The Agudas HaRabbanim was the rabbinic organization that had power. They may have made a tragic mistake, and we'll talk about this in great depth, but I don't know when, next year, the year afterwards. Fascinating story, the history of the rabbinical organizations. But they wouldn't allow in the American rabbis. They looked down at the American rabbis. Was kennen sie? What do they know? No one would ever dream that YU, American soil, Lakewood as well for that matter, would turn out Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. You take a look, or Heschel Schachter, Rosenzweig, I mean, these are homegrown products. Who could ever dream what would happen in America? But they looked down, 20s into the 30s, and they refused to take in, as we explained, and gave sources, and no American rabbis, you don't know anything. But even though the RCA, Rabbinical Council of America, was starting to function, it was a lightweight, it was a midget. It's like comparing some Shmura Matzah little bakery, hand bakery, to Manischewitz. Manischewitz bakes in a day what that bakery bakes in a year. Agudas HaRabbanim, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis, the United States and Canada, Reb Lazer Silber of Cincinnati, they were power. Rav Dov Aryeh HaKohen Leventhal, they were power. Rav Israel Rosenberg, Rav Yosef Konvich, Newark, the Ridbas's son-in-law, that was power. So Kol Zman, the yeshiva, had no competition. Rabbi Rebel could control it very nicely. He was part of Degudas Rabbanim, and yet he was part of RCA. He bridged the two worlds. Now, Chabad is in America. Reb Baron Cutler is in America. Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky is in Canada. The great Rabbanim of Europe are here. There's a lot of anti-college feeling. Reb Elchanan Wasserman, his famous letter, if you're going to be saved by Skokie, what you call Skokie today, or YU, better to remain in Europe. It's one thing to die physically, it's worse to die spiritually. By the way, it's on websites now. This came out again, and Rabbi Miller's book, Avigdor Miller's Sefer, which I tell you, I can't get over the advertising as if something new has come to the world. It's a replay of Reb Elchanan Wasserman, of Ikvata de Mashichata. All it does is expand it and give historical background, but there's nothing new, but it created a storm. People are quoting it. Better to be killed by God or than to become a Mechallel Shabbos. I do not agree, because if you're a Mechallel Shabbos, there's always hope you'll come back, your children will come back, your grandchildren will come back. And I can tell you, the majority of students that I have taught in the Kollel in the last 20 years, I'm not certain that their grandparents were showing the Shabbos. Some of them, their parents weren't even showing the Shabbos. But all right, that's the point of view we spoke about when we dealt with the Holocaust on a theological level in this very Monday class. But now the Agudas HaRabbanim want to put their fingers on top of yeshivas, Reb Yitzchok Chochanan. We don't want you to make choices that are going to be in our eyes detrimental to Yiddishkeit in the United States. So that the whole question of finding a successor to Reb Moshe Soloveitchik to Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revo becomes more compounded, more complex, because you had the yeshiva, the board of trustees, and you have the outsiders, the Aguras HaRabbanim. We are the bosses, we are the rabbis, we are in charge, we are the ones that put you on the map. We want to be sure that you stay on the map. Let me end off with one more point. Again, it's a point that you can understand. We in the state of Israel are caught up in a bitter struggle. So-called Haredim versus Datiyim Le'umiyim. Kid walks into Yeshiva HaKotel, Haredi kid, and my son, my grandson Roy, should live and be well, years ago was then final year HaKotel, and he said he'd like to speak to some advanced student. So Roy tells me the story. He meets him in the hallway, and the kid starts asking, you know, I come from this yeshiva, this background, I'm just curious what goes on here. So my grandson plays a game with him and starts telling him, yeah, all we learn all day is Rav Kook, and all we learn all day is Chveis, Rav Abiner, this one, that one. And this kid, he's all happy. It's like this Rebbeim telling these yeshivas are a waste of time. It's not there. Then he takes the kid into the Beis Medrash, and this kid's eye, he couldn't believe he sees 600 kids, 700 kids learning Shas and learning Rishonim, and he doesn't find one Sefer of Machshava. But you see, we stereotype. And we meet a Haredi today, we'll jump on him. You don't serve in the army, you never went to college, you're an ignorant, you're this, you're that. So could you imagine the Haredi you pull out? He has a PhD in Chveis and Freudian psychology, and he pulls out, he was in the army, in the psychological division of the army, in mental health care, for 20 years. But you see, we generalize. A Haredi will meet a Dati Lumi guy. He'll find a heart of gold, a heart of Yirat Shemayim, a world of learning. We generalize. Now, of course, it is true that most Haredim at this point in time don't have general education and don't serve in the army. It is true that most Datim Lumiyim are certainly going to be involved in more Machshava than a kid learning in Panovich. But these are generalizations. Why am I saying this? Go back in time. Go into the time machine. Go back to 1940. The Akudas HaRabbanim, the American kids at Yeshiva, viewed them charlatans, fakers. Who are they? They give phony hashgacha. They're always involved in machloket. They'll sell their souls for a dollar bill. Morty is going to ask his grandfather, Rabbi Nathan Paragon, what did you think of the Agudas HaRabbanim people in 1939? Ask your grandfather. I understand. He's not in this world anymore. But
my uncle.
That's your uncle, Rabbi? Your great-uncle? Or your uncle?
My uncle.
Oh, that's your uncle. I knew him from the Brahmin, a hush of a rav, Rabbi Nathan Paragon, who didn't know him. He asked his uncle, what did he think? And he'd get the answer. Ay, a good Sarabbanim, Rishayim Gemurim, they'll take a pumpernickel and they'll put a kosher Pesach sign on it. Alright, there were certain rabbis who did that. Yes, I don't know what, I'm not an idiot. Gasworth did a doctorate on Columbia, Freud, corruption and holiness. Get the doctorate. It's probably online today. Hal Gasworth did a doctorate on it. There's no question that there were others. But of course, the majority were Elif, but they had a problem. America was a little bit beyond their comprehension. All this comes to play in the tremendous battle that breaks out. mi barash, who will the next yeshiva be, and who will the next president be of yeshiva and yeshiva college. I need not tell you, I wouldn't miss the next shiurim for all the rice in China and all the gold in Putin's personal bank. My dear students, the world could have turned over many times while we taught, but this is the greatness of the internet. You can pick it all up tonight, leisurely, sitting in a nice, comfortable chair. Today's shiur, we ended off for Baron Cutler. It's an interesting shiur. I don't know if I'm right or wrong. You have to think about it. That Hasidim conquered the world, I'm absolutely right. That the Rav was not happy with certain aspects of it, I'm absolutely right. How Rav Aaron would relate is only theory. Rav Aaron has not been here since 1962. But it's interesting. The old timers from Lakewood, at least the ones I interact with, were not happy to see Rav Malkiel stand shoulder to shoulder with one of the Satmar Rebbeim. But that's the world today. Who accomplished more? Machloket between Rakefet and a very prominent student of his who holds a very important position in the American Torah world. You can agree or disagree with me or with my student. Think about it. And then we set the stage. Why you, whither, to quote modern Hebrew literature, La'an Friedenberg, which way? We will see. Now, first of all, I want to wish everyone a Chag Kasher Sameach. Actually, you have to say a Chag Sameach for Kasher, because those of us that work in Kasher the house for Pesach, if you would see what my wife has carried on already, you'd understand. I got to remind her, the Sameach, forget about the Kasher, that it is. But those of you who are going away, people go away. I've gone away, I've been telling you, I can't do it anymore. It's like being locked in jail. What I love about you, the Shalayim, I don't know what you can say about the Chav, but there is so much going on here on Pesach that you just go out of your mind what to do first. But at least one thing I will accomplish, I have to get to the Kotel. I mean, now that I can't go every Friday night, Chag, so one day we have to go to the Old City, go to the Kotel, the Bezrat Hashem. Right after Pesach, class picks up again for Sunday, Monday. Then there'll be a break for 2 weeks. I'm teaching in YU, but YU on the other side of the world. Now, a lot of interesting freebies. This is for Yitzchak Pesach back. Does anyone want this? I Xerox some of the sources on Rabbi Menashe Klein that I've been quoting in class, so I sent it out to the student. Now, this was a gift. I had four of them yesterday. I have one left. A student of mine from the Kollel, from BMT as well, he put out Shas. He's Bucky and Shas, Jonathan, Rabbi Jonathan Berger, Bucky and Shas, Pshutokam Ashmo. He put out a whole Shas with quotations, with punctuation, you'll see, to make it easier to understand. I have a problem, the print is too small. But this is Masechtet Rosh Hashanah, which is soon coming up in the Daf Yomi. We do Beitzah then Rosh Hashanah. If anyone wants a Masechtet Rosh Hashanah, it's yours for the asking. Just write a thank you note to Jonathan Berger and give it to me. I will send it on to him. Now, I have to tell you, Rabbi Meir Twesky, I have two copies of this. Put it, Rabbi Meir Twesky should live and be well, the Rav's grandson. He is so capable in writing English. You can see this is a Harvard graduate. He writes about women putting on tefillin. I have to say I agree with every word. This is my Talmud, Rabbi Stephen Trusansky, dealing with the contemporary issue of Haredim and the army. And he quotes me in it correctly. Generally when you're quoted, it's not what you actually said. Here it's word by word. This is Rabbi Beryl Wan, who writes an article about the Haredi situation. I have to tell you, I could have written this article on it. Beryl Wine.
I read it, I thought it was.
Yeah, Beryl Wine has really come a long way. This is what I mentioned yesterday. Anyone here with legal training? This is so fascinating. A person who was in class yesterday comes to the Sunday class. His family was saved. His life was saved by a non-Jewish woman. His daughter, aided by two professionals, did a documentary on that woman who later becomes a Hasid Umat Olam, honored by Yad Vashem. A Japanese lady who's a Canadian citizen writes a book, a novel, based upon this documentary. They are suing her for plagiarism. Is it plagiarism? Penguin Books, who published the book, say, we have a right to take historic facts. Your documentary turned it into living history. This is a novel based upon historic facts. Can anyone sue me for writing about history? Of course not. It's life. Anyone can. Halavai, halavai. Someone should write about Rav Shmuel Belkin. It's going to be interesting to see the way they rule. This too is very fascinating. Rabbi Avi Weiss and his shul held a big, conference for women and men who were already married to write a post-nuptial agreement so that we'll never have a case again of a man holding a get over a woman's head. This article, very interesting, 25% of Haredi youth identify as Zionist. And what that article is saying is very true. People who live here and are born here and integrated here, today you can be Haredi and you're part of the Israeli scene. You can be Haredi and be a general. We've already had major generals in the IDF who were Haredi. The last general in charge of law in the army was a Haredi. He was a Baal Tshuva living in Bnei Brak. His kids are all Haredi education. It's a different world today. So a kid like that, suddenly, why do I have to live here? I love this state. This state is wonderful. In other words, he doesn't arrive at this from a religious Zionist background. He arrives at it from the reality of day-to-day life. It's a very fascinating article. Finally, this gentleman was in the Kollel, was in YU with me. He's older. I taught his children, his sons, his daughters, his son-in-law, Rabbi Norbert Weinberg. He was a rabbi in New England, if I recall correctly. It's anyone going to Chinuch should read this. It's when he goes to the Lubavitcher Rebbe to complain, why am I teaching him a Talmud Torah? What do I accomplish? These kids are going to retreat for anyway. And what the Rebbe answers him is sheer genius. You have to read it. And it changed his whole life. He remained in Chinuch. Until we meet again in health and happiness. I got to tell you, I was Masada Kedushin on Friday, and it was a fabulous wedding. A Talmud from this Kollel. I never had a wedding like it. When I'm working on the Ketuvah, the Chatan is standing next to me, and sitting next to me, he's saying to me, he was in his early 40s, Rebbe, I can't believe this is really happening. I can't believe that Baruch Hashem, he got married. One comment on it was a wedding. The girl is Persian origins, Beverly Hills, Aliyah. Nice, firm girl, good girl. And he's from Atlanta, Georgia, to Jerusalem. As I spoke on Kippur Pesach and Am Yisrael, it was the perfect talk for this particular wedding. But I have to tell you, following the theme of my talk, one of our YU graduates, one of our Hoshiva graduates living here, comes over to me and he says to me, Rebbe, did you look at the invitation carefully? I say, what do you mean? He says, they're two different times. And I checked it out. He was right. The English reads Chuppah 11 a.m. promptly. Hebrew, Esav v'chetzi. What's the difference? The Americans come on time, but the Sfadim are late. So Taka, the invitation read 10:30 at 11 o'clock. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Bedanya. Thank you very much. I walk in today thinking I'll have two students, Tanai and Hara. And for those of you that are taking the bus of a Chaluk test, tell them they owe you 10 points. for honoring Aaron Ratcheffet. And since I'm the eldest faculty member here today, 10 points on that house.
You should stay.